Welcome to Couve.com. I'm your host, David Medore. We have for our guest today, Tom Mielke. Tom is running for county commissioner. He's our current county commissioner for District 1, and the race is for countywide now. Everybody in the county gets to vote for two county positions this election. Welcome, Tom. This is your opportunity to relate directly to the voters. Mm-hmm. I'm here to facilitate that conversation. So, Tom, you've been a county commissioner for one term. You want to run again. You must have motivation. Why are you running?
I do. I think that, to me, it moves slow. There's been a lot of things that we've been trying to make changes on, and almost 4 years has gone by, and we're only maybe a third of the way through.
In other words, you want to accomplish a whole lot more.
Right. We make a list. My good example was we had a parking issue up around WSU, Vancouver up there, and mm-hmm. The neighbors were complaining because the people would park in front of their houses and throw their lunch sacks out, and they didn't want to pay the parking fee at WSU, which wasn't that much, but they still, I mean, sometimes these are students and they don't have that money. So in an effort to stop all that very quickly, we were able to put a no parking. Was very inconvenient, and I had children too, and they all have their own cars, and you have a double car driveway, and you can't park out in front of your house. So I promised those people I would move forward to see that we would get some type of a parking permit for them to be able to do that.
So people can park in front of their own homes without other people taking those spaces.
Yes. So it's basically no parking or parking by permit only.
Uh-huh.
It took me a year and a half to get it done. And the way I moved it along at the very end, and every week at the board meeting, I brought it up. Even the Columbian reporter was at the board meeting and said, yes, I remember, you brought that up every time. In fact, they were making fun of me for bringing it up. But I kept my promise to the few people who was very, very active and adamant about wanting to park there. So finally I went to the, they told me it cost me $50,000 to implement a parking permit. So I went to the city of Vancouver because they already have parking permits in place. And I asked them, would you issue me a one-year or two-year parking permit? And can you do that between $35 and $50 per household and give maybe a couple permits per household? And they said, well, yeah, we could do that. And so I took it back to the board and I said, well, I've got good news that you don't have to spend $25,000 or $50,000. We can get it done for just a few dollars at the expense of the homeowner, and we got it done.
So basically, it was a net zero cost to the county.
Well, no, the county came back the next week and they said, "Oh, Tom, we're so glad you looked into that because now we can do it for nothing." So through just application, the people could apply for it. And they made fun of me. They mocked me for it. A year and a half it took me to get that done.
Who's mocking?
Staff, the newspapers.
Okay.
It got to where, oh, you're going to talk about that again. And so we finally got it done. Okay. And 2 weeks later, I said, I'd like to have a report of how many people have applied for the parking permit in front of their home.
Mm-hmm.
We had 86%. 2 weeks into it, 86% of the people were asking for that parking permit in their behalf.
Well, what was the holdup? You work with staff. Staff basically is directed to do something, I expect. You get input from them, but then you say, okay, go get her done. The three commissioners, I assume that you would get support by the commissioners, right?
They gave me support. We don't do the work. We give that to our administrator. Our administrator goes down and gives it to the department heads. The department head's supposed to work on it. It just too slow for me. And in that case, I guess that they didn't have that fire and ability to serve. I promised these people I would go back and find a way that they can do that. I still had two or three neighbors coming up and giving me heck during the hearings for moving forward with it. I didn't go back and check, but I would be willing to bet that they have a parking permit.
Well, good. Okay, what are the major issues, Tom? Or say, let me just pick one. What is a major issue facing the county that you would like to be able to do that so far you haven't been able to get done?
Well, we've been working on it, but we haven't got it all the way. And one of the things we talk about, they always like to talk about, this is their budget. Now, in order to get to that budget, this is how much money they need, this is how much they think they want. And so therefore, anybody that uses that service has to pay by the number. So if they have 1,000 people on the average using this this service, they divide that 1,000 into that budget, and that's what the fee is. I said, no. Your fee is the service that you provide. Now you provide, you tell me what it costs. Now, when we look at that cost, we look at the true cost of an employee. That's wages, benefits, car, desk, rent, because we charge each department rent. I mean, that's part of their budget. So when it comes up and the employee costs $130 to $180 an hour.
That's average?
Somewhere in that range. Most of the people I talk with, they don't have a problem when they think about it for a moment. At least they have a number they could grasp. But at least when they come out there, they say, okay, you're here for a half an hour. It took you a half an hour to get here and a half hour to get back and a half hour to do your work. That's 2 hours of work. Therefore, you're going to charge me $300-$400. And I can understand that. But I don't understand when you show up on my job, you're there for a half an hour, and I get a bill for $500. Please explain to me what service you provided in that $500. Mm-hmm. So we're not there all the way. I discovered the other day that there were several that we haven't addressed yet. As three more came forward, we were processing that into the ordinance. I said, let's do these others right now. Oh, they didn't want to do that right then. But they promised me they would continue to work on that. Amongst these were the ones that we labeled as silly permits. Silly permits, $1,000 permit for a carport, $1,000 permit for a patio cover. Mm. You had to buy a permit to put your siding on or to re-roof the hot water tank. Well, we come to find out that the housing administration down here weren't buying permits for hot waters at all. So we did start one little process there where you buy a book. And in this book, I think there's 10 in the book, and I forgot what the cost is, but they were like pre-issued. So you bought these for service people, for example. Mm-hmm. And it was nothing like what they had, but then they could use these things and send them in as they used them up when they buy them for the book. But for you and me, we don't buy a book. And so therefore, we wanted to put a patio cover on. Mm-hmm. It was still $1,000. It cost $1,000 for the material to build it, yeah. And $1,000 for the permit. Yeah. What is the county providing for that $1,000?
That's a good question. Let's say you're going to put an awning on your house.
Yeah. So what I see is that the guy comes out, he's charging me $130 an hour to do my permit, to issue my permit, and come out and inspect my work, make sure it's a code, make sure it's safe. And that's it. So I've got no less than $200 invested in a permit, in the best case scenario. But I take it one step farther. A patio cover is a temporary structure. If I'm selling my house and the person comes out and inspects it and says, that's a terrible job you did on your patio cover, I'm not going to give you this much for your house because I think I need to rebuild that. Mm-hmm. You can't protect everybody from everything, and that's a good example.
Yeah. You know, I think one of the educational things to do for anybody is to go to the Clark County Fair, and they have all these vendors there, people that put in patio covers and just you name it, brickwork, yes. And whatever, and talk to them and say, well, how much is it going to, what's involved in getting the permit to do this? Because I've done this mm-hmm. last time. Mm-hmm. And it's a very insightful process because you find out it costs how much,
yes.
And it takes how long. It's a real good instant feedback. You get all those vendors there, they give you instant feedback on the process, and whether it's in the city or whether it's in the county. Mm-hmm. And it's a real good reality check. This last time, there were a lot of very unhappy workers there, suppliers there, entrepreneurs there, yes. Sellers there, installers. One of the numbers I recently got back from the county, I wanted to know what the county sheriff, how the full-time sheriff deputies, how that count, the number of people out there varied over time. Mm-hmm. So back in 2008, we had 156 full-time deputy sheriffs. And then it's been decreasing and decreasing and decreasing. And now we're down to 135. We've lost 21 mm-hmm. over since 2008 in this last term. And I wonder, do you have a difference between, you feel like that's a necessary cut, or you feel like, no, we really, you can't cut there, you need to cut somewhere else?
So many times it's not a cut, but it's more of an added expense. And one of the things that I have a real problem with are the guilds or the collective bargaining units. Mm-hmm. I believe that public safety is number one. That's mm-hmm. number one job of government before we have parks, before we have any luxury service whatsoever.
Right.
And what happens is that they come back up and they negotiate for more benefits and more wages, and you multiply it by, what, 150, you said?
135 now.
135. And that's major dollars. Mm-hmm. And you're talking about $1 million every time. So what happens is that we go to them and say, well, this is your budget. Mm-hmm. And this is where you have to stay in, and we don't micromanage the sheriff because he's an elected official. Mm-hmm. Also, mm-hmm. we control only his budget. Mm-hmm. The budget, it's wants and needs. Mm-hmm. This is what I want. This is what I need. It's the true with the sheriff's department or the road department or anything else. And one of the things you got to look at is that I go back through and I look what's on their list.
Yeah,
they still have a jail designer on payroll.
I can't tell. Are we designing jails still?
No, we're not even building jails, but we still have one that's on payroll. I don't know what he does, but he's still on payroll. So okay. I go back and I look at that.
Yeah.
And I can suggest to the sheriff that maybe he might want to put a deputy in place of mm-hmm. that mm-hmm. jail designer, but he could tell me go fly a kite too. Mm-hmm. So that's what we're up against.
Okay.
It's by the sheriff's choice that we do that. Now, that being said, the true ideal wish is to have one officer, I think, per thousand population. Okay. Very, very, very few policing agencies have a ratio like that. Mm-hmm. We are somewhere between 6 and 7, I think it's per thousand. But what's more important is that, and I catch the sheriff on this.
You mean one officer per 6 or 7,000, you mean?
Yeah, I think that's okay. The ratio mm-hmm. proper. I think I'm saying that correctly.
In other words, 6 or 7 times fewer officers than what you would really like to have.
Yeah, we'll probably have 3% less than what we really should have on a desired best case scenario. Mm-hmm. But so we go around and we compare it. And when I ask the sheriff about this, he doesn't like to answer my question mm-hmm. because what it has to do with when you compare our crime rate with another policing agency, what is the crime rate? Well, they have more officers, but they have more crime. Mm-hmm. We have less crime and less officers. Mm-hmm. So the good or bad, that's what the ratio is. Mm-hmm. We don't have nearly the crime as other people that have more officers for the same population.
Yeah, like Portland, for instance.
Right, yeah. That's a good example, yeah.
Well, as I see it, we have two ends of the spectrum. One end of the spectrum you have, here's your budget. There's $1 million, you do what you want with it because it's your department. The other end of the spectrum is that you're micromanaging everything and say, here's all the detail, yes. and you need to follow that, and they really can't do that. But in between is where I like to be, Tom. And this is my own opinion, mm-hmm. and it's not. I just want to bounce it off you to see how realistic you think it is.
Yeah.
And it is, okay, I'm going to go negotiate with you. I'm not going to micromanage you, but I'm going to designate, and if it be possible to do that, to say, I'm going to fund 8 more officers, conditional that you hire 8 more officers, you fund 8 more officers, or you don't get it. Will that work, Tom?
I don't know. He's never been that nice to us.
Well, we're being really nice to them because we're actually bumping up their budget.
Well, you know, I guess you want to keep feeding the dragon, you can do that. But down in the gunnels of this boat, there's a whole bunch of people that have been left on the ark that we don't know about. One of my areas that I always look at, and it's not very popular, and that's our Marine Patrol. Great, great patrol, very busy, lots of safety, but you know, we have a fire department out there, we have a police department out there, we have the sheriff department out there, and on the same body of water, Portland has a police department out there, fire department out there, and a sheriff out there, and we have the Coast Guard out there. On the same body of water.
Kind of redundantly.
What?
Kind of redundant.
Oh, yes. Extremely so.
Isn't there cooperation there? You cover the base, or I'll cover the base.
It's a beautiful program. It's a beautiful program. It has a good show. I guess if people aren't dying, that's good. But then, you know, it's like I carry a big stick with me all the time to keep the elephants away, and you don't see any elephants either. So that's kind of the comparison that I see. Frivolous, I don't know. Duplicate, quadrupled, overlapping.
Inefficient, basically, bottom line.
And it's very expensive.
Yeah, yeah. Well, let me ask you about the biggest issue in our area, which is the CRC light rail tolling project. We've got on the ballot Proposition 1. Actually, there's three Proposition 1s. Proposition 1, Yakult Operation and Maintenance. Proposition 1, Vancouver Parks. And Proposition 1, CTRAN, BRT, and light rail. If the Proposition 1, BRT, light rail, gets defeated, there are those that are saying, that means we can fund it another way. The question is, Tom, what will your response be if it gets defeated and you have people like Tim Leavitt saying, hey, we're going to fund it another way? Are you going to take a stand, or are you going to just say, well, it's you know, we have to just go with what they do?
I'm kind of that old shoe. I've been taking a stand since 1998. That's the first time I was introduced to the problem. And in 2002, I saw the manipulating putting the governors of both states in charge of the Department of Transportation in preparation for this at that time. And they told me, yeah, we're building light rail in Vancouver. I said, no, you're not. Oh, yeah, take another look at it. It's pointing right there. It's going to go there. So, and then when the conversation got a little bit more serious, as a legislator sitting on transportation, I was able to stop that from going forward. When I left, Representative Wallace ran the legislation on the transportation. She sat there, and she got the first $50 million for that.
And now she's working for David. Isn't she working for David Evans Associates now?
I don't know.
That's where I heard.
I don't know. I
could be wrong.
I know that they provided a job at DOT for an interim for her. I see this kind of stuff going on a lot.
Yeah.
But back in 1998, we met with like delegations from Oregon legislators, House members, Senate members, and all of our staff. Mm-hmm. We took Amtrak and we met down there at Portland. Mm-hmm. And after over four hours of talking about the problem and whatnot, it came up and we said, the corridor is at near capacity. It wouldn't make a difference if you built 16-lane bridge across there. The corridor is at near capacity in 1998. Our job at that time was to look for another corridor.
In other words, build another bridge somewhere.
And that was the task that we all agreed to do. Mm-hmm. But there was another agenda by higher powers to go with light rail. Mm-hmm. So they had to find a reason to build light rail. Mm-hmm. And the Oregon Supreme Court uncovered this during their investigation of it. It was all about light rail. Yeah. They threw the bridge in as a caveat,
I see
a
that
carrot.
As the cheese in the mousetrap.
Yeah. Yes, yeah. Yes, that's what
cheese,
it's all about. Right? So they've rushed this thing all the way through. They were having all these hearings. Nobody was hearing. Nobody was listening in all the hearings.
Just going through the motion.
Just going through the motions. And then the other thing that they did, they just kept shoving money at it. And they were
they
never held accountable.
Millions of dollars a month. Their average now is close to $2.5 million a month.
Never audited. And the reason why, because CRC was down here and all the money was coming from Olympia and the governor was sitting on all that information. Yeah. The governor right now is being sued. In fact, I think they just got done making a ruling on the governor of Washington withholding information that should have been of public knowledge, and that was one of them.
About the CRC?
Yes.
Evergreen, I didn't know that.
I think it was Evergreen Freedom Foundation sued him. I don't know if it was about the CRC, but there's many, many things that she was not releasing. Yeah.
Violating open government
yes,
laws.
Yes, she was holding stuff like that back.
So the bottom line, if Prop 1 fails, what are you going to do, Tom?
Oh, yeah, we're back to the original question.
Yeah?
Okay, I got it. I think we need to say the same thing, and I've already said this to everybody at CTRAN that's sitting around that would listen to me, is that you need to recognize this as a voice of the people and their opinion of light rail.
Okay.
They voted it down before, twice.
Yep.
I did my survey 5 years ago, and it's coming up the exact same today. I just read in CTRAN, but the way the title of the article was, it made it sound like it was the people were in favor. Yep. But what it is, and right now it's like 66%, when I did it was like 72%, mm-hmm. was opposed to paying for a new bridge because they know it's not needed.
Right. But let me bring you back, Tom.
But if it's free, 49% support it. Or no, yeah. 50, no, more people support it if it's free.
Yeah.
But if I have to pay for it, I don't want it.
Well, in reality, we are, we have one of the highest gas taxes in the nation, so we are paying for
it. Yes, we've always been
but
there,
if you,
yes.
And if you pay tolls on top, you're paying for it twice. Mm-hmm. Question is, what are you going to do, Tom, if that fails? Because we got the background. Mm-hmm. Because the way I see it, neutrality is not going to cut it. They're going to steamroll over us. And if we don't take a stand and say, the people said no, I'm going to insist that this not go forward, mm-hmm. otherwise you're going to steamroll, it seems to me.
Looking back just in the last year or two, three times I brought it to the floor of the hearing mm-hmm. of the county commissioners.
In other words, you made a motion?
I made a motion.
You couldn't get a second?
We didn't have the authority to do that. So I took it to the Regional Transportation Council. And I made the motion, and they said, RTC, mm-hmm. they said we could not, we didn't have the authority there either. It's kind of strange because they are the oversight committee that oversees that project
and
all the other transportation projects. Mm-hmm. I then took it to CTRAN board, which I sit on, mm-hmm. and I made the motion there, mm-hmm. and I couldn't get a second.
So you're a lone minority. You can't get a second to stop this flow of money into the non-bid process. Yes. They still don't have $150 to $160 million without even plans, their buildable plans.
I've asked, okay. Please stop spending money, $1 million, $1.5 million every month until
it's
you decide what
now,
you're
Tom,
going to do.
It's about another $1 million a month now. They're spending more than they were before. So if you could get a second to that motion to withdraw all support mm-hmm. of the CRC project, would you do that?
Oh, absolutely. In fact, at one point when they were trying to identify it as the Transportation Alliance Group, mm-hmm. and they were saying that this is locally preferred project, we at the county board voted no. We didn't want to recognize it as a locally preferred, and therefore we didn't want to we didn't want our logo under the Transportation Alliance, I think it was called. Mm-hmm. They keep making new groups of the same people. Yeah. Then they all come back and they say, well, I got all these six groups. They all agree.
And they're all the same people.
It's been going on ever since CRC started.
Yeah. Well, you're running, there's two people in your race. You're District 1, and everybody in the county gets to vote for District 1. Everybody in the county gets to vote for District 2 also.
Yes.
There's going to be four candidates on this ballot. And you're the other fellow running, Joe Tanner, he is for the CRC project. He's come out openly and say, yep, full speed ahead. And so if he gets elected if Mark gets elected, or even if he gets elected and Mark doesn't get elected, then you still got two votes that say go full speed ahead.
Yeah.
We're in trouble. We're going to steamroll.
That's
going to. Even if people say no, mm-hmm. that's the danger. It's still full speed ahead.
We have one more caveat there. And they tried to circumvent it this last year, and mm-hmm. I kept pushing for it, kept pushing for a vote. And I tried to shame them into it even. I even said, Mayor, you were elected on this issue. And they still wouldn't give me a second on that board. And started back in February. Every meeting last year that I started, no, this year, I started asking for that vote. You never saw that in the newspaper. You wouldn't even know I was at the meeting, and yet we were putting it up on its ear every month. Every month we put that up there. Finally, they come back and they wanted to narrow it very, very tightly as to what it is. And that's what they're saying now. It's just for maintenance and operations. And at one point, Mayor Irish said, well, can't we use the money that we got from the last election? You know, they got another increase for CTRAN.
Well, they promised in that last election that they wouldn't.
They told him right away, hey, don't forget, we already have a lot of people against what we're doing right now. Please don't go there because mm-hmm. people have accused us of it already. That was where he would have liked to have gone. But under the RCWs, anything that goes out there for maintenance and operation of light rail has to go to the vote of the people.
You know, that is actually state law, and I've seen that state law. It says very, very clearly, any form of funding for light rail must be approved by the people. I talked to Jeff Hamm today, Nancy Boyd, Paul Montague, Jack Berkman, all these proponents.
You're just a glutton for punishment, aren't you?
And they all have no concerns about these reports that come out with Tiffany Couch. Full speed ahead, that's all water under the bridge. And there are lots of forms, ways, lots of alternatives, and they're not bound by state law to be able to do it. It's like the fawn on the Narnia. It's not what I'm doing, what I did, it's what I'm doing, what I'm going to do. Yes. Well, I'm really sorry. You know, it's like they're planning on breaking the law, it appears. So like,
well, I think
how
pressure,
can they do that?
I think we put enough pressure on them this year
Hold them
to make it go to the vote.
Yeah.
They tried to delay the vote after they start the project. They said, the project shouldn't even go forward.
I was there, and I had a number of conversations with another county commissioner race. Steve Stewart, in 2010, had a long conversation with him multiple times, and he promised that people are going to have a vote before we make a decision on this.
Yes.
In November 2011, it's actually in the September 13 minutes of 2010 minutes.
That's correct.
And so CTRAN decided that. Mark was chairman of the board of CTRAN, and that whole year went by. And nothing happened. And now we have, they made the decision. Mm-hmm. It was August 9 of 2011. Yeah. They all voted to approve that before the people had a vote on it. And now this promised vote is, it's no longer whether or not you want it. It's whether or not you want to pay for it this way or that way.
Mm-hmm.
Sounds to me like it's a broken promise. Don't you think it sounds
well,
like?
Well, you'd think that legal man that we have sitting there on payroll under contract at CTRAN, okay, would say, wait a minute, you can't do that. But I just can't help but feel that he's already discussed it with Mr. Hamm and they're going to go forward with it until we challenge it.
Okay, there are lots of issues, Tom. We've covered that one pretty well. So you'd like a second in the motion. You know what it feels like to be in the minority.
Oh, boy.
So we have a jobs crisis here. We have all these people that are driving across out of state to Portland. We ought to compete so much better than Portland. I mean, they got a state income tax over there. They got just a lot more regulations. At least over time, they have. When I first arrived here, and decided that Clark County, Washington, was going to be our new home back in 1990, it's like there's no contest. There's no way I'm going to move our family and business into Oregon, anywhere in Oregon.
That's
we
right.
chose Clark County, Washington, and during these last decades. This difference has become like this, and now people are driving over there to get jobs. What in the world are we doing driving people out of our area? What can you do, Tom?
I think it goes back. It goes back poor planning. And when I was running originally, and I made two steps at it, I said, you're not planning for growth. We're growing at 3%, and you're planning for 1.5% repeatedly over and over and over. And you wonder why our infrastructure is not in place. You wonder why we don't have enough zoning for where jobs might be created. We don't have any heavy industrial to speak of. Mm-hmm. A couple spots, and that's all we have. Mm-hmm. We should have a choice. And one of the things I noticed, and I was trying to help, I come from the trucking industry, and I still own know several trucking company owners, they would love to have their own yard. And there's no place big enough available under that zoning for them to purchase their own land, put their own shops in, their own dispatch offices. We don't have it. And so that's one of the things we've been pushing now. I'm tired of giving lip service. We keep saying we want to be business friendly, and we're not.
Yeah.
We see it repeated over and over. One week, I had three cases come before me. The Baptist Church incident, we had Chuck's Produce, we had, what was the other one? And I finally went to my administrator and I was upset and I said, I'm tired of being called a liar. I'm tired of giving lip service. And three times this week, it has come before me that the other one was Brightwater Guns, a gun store. They were just moving from one place to another about a block away and it started off at $20,000.
For a permit.
For a permit to move into the other building, because the other building was a building within a building, like a shopping mall. They're all under basically one roof. Everything inside is superstructure. And they wanted him to go in there and have an engineer go in there and do that. That stuff
on the make work.
That stuff that's on the book, that has to go away.
Yeah, yeah.
And we finally got it done with $605.
Good.
We started
there's a happy ending there.
But many.
You brought up the Faith Baptist Church.
Yes,
that wanted to hire 4 teachers and a part-time administrator, and the permit fee for that was $120,000.
Yeah.
Most of that being for traffic impact fees, because you're actually going to have customers on the road. That's a bad thing.
Yes,
the way that it came across to them. And so they sat down, and Mark Bolt basically said, go get a land use attorney. After the behind the scenes, just simply talking one-on-one. And so the negotiation was there, well, if you don't hire 4 teachers, instead you just hire 1 teacher, then it's only going to cost you $20,000 for the permit. You knock off $100,000.
As
so
though
the agenda
understand.
Is to kill jobs. I mean, you're like negotiating jobs away.
Yeah.
I think, what are we doing?
I was comparing.
Every job counts.
The solution they came up with was basically to be done by 3 o'clock instead of 4 o'clock or 5 o'clock, which moved them to a different range.
Restrict their hours.
Of traffic. We've been talking for 3 years that I know of redefining the level of service. Mm-hmm. A level of service is, for example, on that street, the speed limit. Of concurrence is 16 miles an hour. And if it drops below 16 miles an hour on the average, then you're out of concurrence, moratoriums go in, and you're all done. So how do you solve the problem? You go in there and you move it down to 14 miles per hour. That's how simple it was.
Okay.
That's what happened on 134th. They put the moratoriums in on there, they stopped.
Street. Mm-hmm.
They made it more difficult, it cost more money for impact fees. Let me talk about impact fees for a minute.
Okay.
Impact fees, we have never had impact fees until the mid-90s. And that's when the regime that was here and the Board of Commissioners said, we need to find some more money, the same as the governor does. We need to hire more people in the Department of Revenue to find more money.
Grow the size and cost of government.
Yes.
Got a fee.
So they
found
out about this impact fee, and they went to Olympia and said, tell us about your impact fee. Give us the formula. The formula doesn't mean a whole lot. You have a number, you can make the numbers get there any way you want.
Mm-hmm.
We have park impact fees, school impact fees, traffic impact fees. It goes on and on. It's getting to where, in fact, the other day somebody ran the numbers to compare if the Clark County was different than Vancouver or Camas or Batter.
Mm-hmm.
The average was about $34,000 in permits and impact fees before you took a scoop of dirt out of the ground to start the construction.
To build a home.
Yes.
How many, there's 39 counties in Washington State, how many counties have impact fees like we do?
Six have impact fees. Now,
so most of the counties don't have impact fees at all.
Right. I'm told that they have something else in place of it. Now, it's really strange that when I go to Spokane, where my nephew is the county commissioner up there, they do not have impact fees. I haven't had time when I go to Spokane to sit down and catch him and say, what do you have in comparison or a different fee or a different tax that we have that you pay for the infrastructure? You have to pay for the infrastructure somehow. But the impact fees are in place in such a fashion, they're intrusive. Chuck's Produce walked in the front door, and he was the third or fourth person that I know about on Highway 99. He walked in the front door, and the bill that we gave him from our staff was $940,000.
$940,000.
For
impact fees.
Yeah.
Was that traffic impact fees?
Yes. The other just 2 or 3 people fees. That I knew
almost
about.
Almost $1 million.
Yeah. The other 2 people I knew about, they turned around and left. They didn't want.
So we didn't even hear that story. About
no,
the businesses
2 or 3 other stories like
were
that.
Turned away.
One with an athletic club. I forgot what the other one was, but there was at least 2 others, maybe 3 others, that turned around and left. And we talk about being business friendly. Now, they said that it would take the traffic light out of concurrence at the Walmart store. That's 2 traffic lights, or that would be the 3rd traffic light south of where Chuck's Produce was going to be. Why that one? I have no idea in the world. But when they sat down and started, thank goodness that Chuck's Produce said, no, that's not right.
They were willing to negotiate.
We are not a Safeway store.
Mm-hmm.
We only sell produce. Therefore, we only do a fourth or
company.
A fifth of what Safeway does.
They want to bring, like, what, 80 jobs?
80 jobs. 80 jobs. That's
here instead of Portland.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Thank goodness. And then I've been pushing. I've been pushing and pushing for a transportation impact fee remodel thing. And finally, during the hard times, I've been able to get a moratorium on it
Great.
For 18 months. We tied it together with the same moratorium that we have permit fees. We have a fee holiday involved in there.
Step in the right direction.
We have to do these things. I want to be a leader coming out of this world depression. I don't want to sit back. You know, this is an opportunity to get people to look at Clark County and say, look what they're doing right now. Now, we're lucky because all the developers in the past have put the infrastructure in place. Mm-hmm. We have good infrastructure.
In other words, it's already built and our economy has shrunk.
Yeah, and we have to recognize and not step on the toes of those developers who've already paid for that to put this infrastructure in place. We have to respect that. But the way to look at that is that, but first of all, you have to create no less than 9 jobs to get a waiver on your traffic impact fee, which, by the way, I never got to. I think Chuck's Produce may qualify for that, but it's going to be a far cry from $940,000.
Yeah, well, even there, you look at most business startups don't start out with 10 employees guaranteed for 2 years full-time. Most startups start out with mom or pop or mom and pop, and they're small.
I love it. I love it because I go back and I look at my business, my trucking company. I start with one truck. I had to go down the street and get permission from the neighbors to park it next to the vacant field. Microsoft started in the garage. Your business started in your home.
Well, if you want to start without a lot of debt, you start small and you increment up and you grow. We've done that. We're debt-free from the very beginning because we've been patient enough to hold off, don't make the major expense until you actually save for it and then you have something for it. Tom, we've already gone over 30 minutes for this conversation. Why don't we go ahead and wrap it up by you just simply talking directly to the voters in your own words. You can just talk to them direct help them to understand why you're running, what do you want to say?
I have to always tell my story. I was, my family was in politics, and I didn't want to be in politics. I thought it was very mean, very nasty. But then when I started my trucking company, I stayed out of politics until government intruded so far into my business that I said, this is just not right. And there's nothing I could do about it. My nephew was a legislator, and I used to call him up and complain all the time. And finally he says, Uncle Tom, he says, the nice Uncle Tom. He says, you make a good legislator. You should run for the legislature. I think he got tired of hearing me complain. And I did that. I thought, I think I have enough money to retire. I think I have enough money to sell the business and run with the fire in my belly to run for the state legislature. I knew nothing about the state legislature. I had to go to my nephew and say, what do I do next? What do I do now? When do I tell him I'm going to run? And he helped me get through that. But that's an example of a citizen legislature, and that's what it should be. But I had the fire in my belly. There's another man that was going to run that they've been talking into for 6 months. And I met him at the cafe up there at the Ridgefield Junction. And Skip Luschner, he was the admiral on the USS Enterprise. And he was getting ready to run. I said, Skip, I think I could beat you. I said, I'm a war veteran, a combat war veteran. I said, I'm a business owner. And I said, I've got a fire in my belly. We talked about the issues. And he gets up and he said, Tom, he says, I'm going to withdraw my application. I'm going to support you. Mm. And the guy that had been talking to him for 6 months to get him to run, he was really upset with me. But Skip has been a supporter of mine for the last 15 years, since I was in the state legislature. That's what drove me into politics. Politics is in every part of our life. Politics, for whatever you want to call it, it's your government. It's your government. You got to stand up and do it. I made a terrible mistake by not being involved until it was so intrusive into my own business that I got involved. And then the older I became and the more experience I had, from coming from a power company to my own trucking company for 18 years, and then the legislature for another 18 years, all those experiences really gave me an advantage with the committees I sat on. I sat on one committee that was really great. It's called Local Government and Land Use. All 39 counties reported before that committee. I found out what was working in other counties and what wasn't working in Clark County. What an awesome advantage. I sat 8 years on Transportation Committee. I was the delegate for American Legislative Exchange out of the state of Washington that met with other legislators around the United States on transportation issues, so we didn't have to go back out and reinvent that wheel. We were learning from one another what was working and what wasn't. Those things and the last 4 years is my way of paying back to my community the experiences that you, the voters, have placed upon me and the things I learned by you having me represent you. I take representation very, very seriously, and that's the reason I'm here. You are my boss. I'm here to represent you. I'm here to have a good ear, to know where the majority of the people really lie on the issues. I'm here to hold government accountable for what they do, and I believe government should live within their budget the same as you and I do. I don't believe in raising every year, every year, every year. Our raises don't come that way. So why should governments? So we got to keep government in check. I think I have more to give back. I think I've got the experience there. I think I have a record of serving my country and my community. I'd like to go back in behalf of the people and do another 4 years. And with that, I'd appreciate your vote to send me back. Thank you.
If they want to find out more, do you have a website, Tom?
I do. It's tommielke.com.
How do you spell that?
M-I-E-L-K-E. I always say it I before E, except after C. I always follow the rule.
Okay. So, tommielke.com. Any other way for them to contact you, whether phone or email?
You know, I have a phone number I have kept public since I was a legislator, and I really pride myself. 7 days a week, I answer that phone, 608-6201. Before I was a legislator, I couldn't get a hold of my legislator. And when I found out who he was, I couldn't get a hold of him. And so it meant very, very important to me. I have never been bothered to the point of disrupting my life. People call up and they have the same thing I had, the fire debility. They've got a problem and they haven't had anybody to talk to, and nobody was there. Nobody was in the office on Friday to talk to. They could call my phone and talk to me. They could tell me their problem in 15 minutes and we could follow up the next workday.
That accessibility is a very good thing, Tom. So it's 360-608. What's the last four digits?
6201.
6201. Okay. Are we wrapped, Tom? I think so.
All right.
Good.
Thank you. We only touched on a few of the issues, but we got a good start.
I wish we could talk about more because we are way over longer than I expected, but at least people got a pretty good idea who you are,
Thank you.
That fire in your belly there, what you want to be able to do, what it feels like to be a minority.
Yeah, it does. But you know, I become very thick-skinned, and I do the best I can, and I try not to take it home.
Okay. Thank you, Tom.
Thank you.